This is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield. A new documentary called Cartel Land by filmmaker Matthew Heineman is an intimate look at vigilante groups on both sides of the Mexican border fighting against official impotence, or worse, to protect their communities from the drug trade. In the film, Heineman captures extraordinary moments of violence, corruption, cult of personality, and even adultery, all recorded with the subject's full participation. Cartel Land has already won George Polk and Directors Guild's awards for documentary journalism. Now, it's up for an Oscar. Or, depending on when you're hearing this, maybe already snagged one. Matthew, welcome to On the Media.
Thanks for having me.
We'll have to take care about spoilers. But to me, the greatest thing about your film is the juxtaposition of the opening sequence where we see two cartel workers preparing to cook a whole mess of meth with the closing, which features a kind of pullback to reveal, and that shocking reveal tells us everything about the polluted ecosystem that is the Mexican drug trade. And to get this footage, you had to be in the middle of the Mexican desert, in the middle of the night, with narcos. Holy hell.
That is a scene that I fought so hard to get. Michoacan, where I was filming, is an incredibly resource-rich area. You know, if you go out tonight and you go have a taco, the avocado is most likely coming from Michoacan. If you go have a mojito, the lime is most likely coming from Michoacan. If you go do meth tonight, the meth is most likely coming from Michoacan. So meth was a really, really important part of this story. And every single shoot, I'd go down there and, you know, ask somebody, do you know somebody, you know somebody, you know somebody, you know somebody who's quote unquote connected. And week after week, month after month, we failed. And then it was on what I thought was our last shoot. We got a call saying, be in this town square at 6 p.m. and you're in. We went to this town square and a group of masked men met us. And before this, we had set up ground rules. My rule was that I didn't want my face to be bagged or to be thrown in the back of a trunk. And their rule was that they wanted their faces to be covered. And so these masked men drove us through these towns and smaller towns and then fields and then smaller fields. And we get out into this forest. And, you know, here's this mobile meth lab. The sun is dipping beneath the mountain. And it's basically pitch black, and I don't shoot with lights, and so I couldn't see a darn thing with my camera. And I couldn't believe I'd fought for so long to get into this position, and suddenly couldn't see anything. And then the head chef starts showing me around the lab with this little flashlight. It's with this little flashlight that I lit the scene.
You're very much prepared for this situation, based on all your years covering war and violence and terrorism. So this is like right up your alley. What was your last film about?
Healthcare, which is a different type of battle, shall we say. Yeah, I was not prepared at all for any of this stuff. You know, this film led me into shootouts, into torture chambers, and, you know, here into this meth lab that we're discussing. And, you know, I'd never been in any situation like this before.
Which makes one wonder how you got from healthcare policy to the middle of the desert?
Well, I'd read this Rolling Stone article about these vigilantes on the U.S. side of the border. It was a world that just fascinated me. I knew nothing about it. I was really intrigued by sort of what provokes men and women to, you know, quote-unquote, take the law into their own hands. And so I reached out to this journalist, Damon Tabor. He introduced me to Tim Naylor Foley, who led this group called Arizona Border Recon. And I spent about 7 months gaining his trust.
Okay, you began with Tim Foley, who was an American veteran and heads this group that is equal parts right-wing militia and neighborhood watch. Here's Foley from the beginning of your film.
Technically, we're vigilantes upholding the law where there is no law. But the phrase vigilante, it's been given a bad name by the media.
They are heavily armed and claim to be protecting our state from foreign threats and from our own government. But the state's growing militia movement is causing concern among law enforcement.
Fire.
Back in the day, vigilante wasn't a bad thing. Say the bandits was riding into your town, the townspeople would all get together and, you know, defend their town.
he was extraordinarily reticent about taking part at first. You know, he had deep distrust of the media, of the quote-unquote, you know, New York liberal media, of which I was apparently a part of. And so we'd talk on the phone once a week, once every couple of weeks. And I told him, I'm not going to bring my own personal beliefs into this experience. You know, I really want to allow you to be yourself and to let the story unfold as it would unfold naturally. So many documentary films put people in nice, neat little boxes. And, you know, my goal was to not do that.
You said you didn't want to arbitrarily put people in a box. Sometimes they constructed the box for themselves. There is this little rant from one of Tim Foley's militia members, which is kind of self-indicting.
The reason I come down here is to do something about having a porous border. The truth is, tall fences make for better neighbors, especially if you have conflicting ideas. You wouldn't put two pit bulls in the same pen and expect them to get along and not fight. Why would you put two races in the same nation and expect them to get along?
When you heard this explicitly racist explanation for this guy's motivation, what kind of box did that put you in as a filmmaker if you don't want to stereotype?
You know, I didn't want to stereotype, but I also wanted to, you know, be honest and truthful as to why they're down there. To not show this would not be telling, you know, an honest and truthful portrait of what's happening down there.
Now, you do spend quite a bit of time with Arizona border recon in the film, but clearly the larger part of your documentary concerns a kind of mirror image group, albeit much larger, on the other side of the border called Autodefensas. Tell me who they are and how you got onto them.
So I'd been filming in Arizona for about 4 or 5 months, and then my father sent me this article about the Autodefensas, a group of citizens in the Mexican state of Michoacán, west of Mexico City, you know, deep down in Mexico, who were rising up to fight back against the Knights Templar cartel, a vicious, vicious cartel. And almost immediately, I wanted to make this parallel story of vigilantism on both sides of the border. I reached out to a journalist that had written a profile piece on the leader of this group, El Doctor Jose Manuel Morales, and I asked her, you know, what's he like as a character? And she said he's the single most interesting man I've ever been around.
Tall, handsome, charitable, brave.
And these deep, dark eyes, as she described them. Even if a quarter of what she said was true, those are music to any documentary filmmaker's ears. 2 weeks later, we were in Mexico filming. And I thought I was going to be down there for 1 or 2 weeks. And 1 or 2 weeks turned into 9 months. I was down there for about 1 or 2 weeks of every month for 9 months.
And what a 9 months. You filmed Autodefensas beating up cartel members. You filmed one of the bosses giving an order to kill one of the cartel members. You filmed shootouts. You documented the mutation of Autodefensas into a criminal gang in its own right. Late in the film, you record the sainted El Doctor Mireles hitting on, actually more than just hitting on, a young girl 40 years his junior and not his wife. I repeat, Matthew, holy hell. Tell me again why you aren't in a shallow grave somewhere.
That's something I don't necessarily like to think about too much, I guess. There's obviously an element of good fortune and luck. The truth be told, though, you know, I definitely had an element of protection by being, you know, a white American, by having a blue passport. Since 2000, 90 journalists have been killed covering the drug wars in Mexico. You know, that being said, you know, when you're out in the middle of the desert, if you're in the middle of a shootout, you know, the bullets don't really care what zip code you're from. So I feel very fortunate. And I owe an enormous amount to my amazing and tiny crew, especially my local fixer, Daniel Fernandez.
There are a couple of scenes that if you're a documentarian and you understand what is being said, you're probably shaking because you realize how important the film is that you're recording. And after El Doctor Mireles is injured in an apparent murder attempt, his fill-in to lead Autodefensas while he's out is a character known as Papa Smurf. And at one critical point, Papa Smurf is addressing the citizens of a town that Autodefensas hopes to liberate from the cartel as it has liberated other towns in the region.
That scene, actually, you know, I'd filmed about 20 Papa Spur speeches. So I was like, I can't film another one of these. And for whatever reason, the light was twinkling in a certain way. I decided, I'm going to film one more. And it turned out to be this amazing scene in which this town, challenges him. This man in the crowd challenges him and asks him, who gives you the authority to do what you do? You're robbing our houses. You come in with your guns. You're flirting with our women. Who gives you the authority to do this? We joked in the edit room. We called this guy Charlie Rose because he asked all the questions that we as audience members wanted to know.
And this is the turning point because he's identified what we've begun to suspect but really aren't quite sure of as an audience, which is that auto defensus, especially without El Doctor Mireles, has lost its moral center and really mutated into the very sort of criminal organization that it's supposed to defend people against. Did you know at that point where this film was headed?
At that point, I had an inkling of what was happening for sure. At first, it really seemed like it was a story of good versus evil, of everyday citizens fighting back against the evil cartel. And things changed pretty quickly, and these lines between good and evil became ever more blurry until, by the end of the film, they were almost indistinguishable. I could be on a mission on an aperitivo. I could be in the back of a truck and look to my left or look to my right and not know if I was with the cartel or the people fighting the cartel. Or something in between, as we see in the end of the film. It's a really, really complicated maze to navigate as all these allegiances were shifting, as people were literally and figuratively changing shirts. And that's one of the things that I really wanted to do in editing this film, was to allow you as an audience member to go on that same journey that I went on. All those moments where I thought I understood what was happening, but things changed, either about my character or about the movement itself, I wanted you to feel those same moments. All those moments where I felt like the rug was pulled out from under me, I wanted you to feel those same moments as well.
Among the other things that are profound about this film is that at one point it becomes kind of a cinematic Milgram experiment where before we really understand how far autodefensus has gone to the side of evil, we hear them interrogating cartel members or suspected cartel members, and we hear in the background the sounds of people being tortured. And at this stage, I am not saying to myself, oh my God, these people are evil. They're torturing these guys. As an audience, I'm going, wait, oh my God, they're torturing. But, these are brutal killers. It's not plain to me that some moral corner has been turned. It's not long. But even then, I'm still personally kind of delivering the shock, or at least standing by with my arms folded while the shock's being delivered. How about you?
That's one of the things that constantly plagued me and would keep me up at night. What would I do? What would I do if my brother was hanging from a bridge or my sister was raped? Would I grab a gun? Is it okay to fight violence with violence? Is vigilantism sustainable? These are all questions that drew me into this world and constantly pushed me both intellectually, emotionally, and physically to make this film. I would sneak into this room, this large bathroom that they used to interrogate people. I would record sound. I would pretend like I was going in the bathroom. I would go into a stall and record sound. I would walk into this room and pretend, like I was having conversations and I would record, because to not capture this to me would be wrong. This was part of the fabric of what made this movement what it was. I felt, a huge duty and obligation to show it.
One thing I can reveal about the scene that reveals so much is that two of these meth cooks have a fatalistic view of the drug trade and all of the collateral damage. They say this.
Of course, cartels, mafia, whatever you want to call it, are involved in this. They're involved in everything. I mean, some way, somehow, everybody has gone corrupted. The auto defenders and the people cooking meth, we're pretty much the same team. We're actually helping fund the auto defenders. Us selling drugs or cooking drugs, it just doesn't look right. But it will always happen. You can't stop the cartel, no matter what you do. It's either Michoacan cooks it, Sinaloa cooks it, Guerrero cooks it. It's just never going to stop, period.
Is he right? Is it ever going to stop?
I think, you know, the elephant in the room is, you know, America's voracious appetite for drugs. You know, it's basic supply and demand. It's basic economics. As long as there's a demand for drugs here in the States, you know, there'll be a supply of drugs coming from Mexico and South America. And with that, the violence that's resulted since 2007 in 100,000 plus people being killed. And, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, I really wanted to highlight with this film is that, you know, there's a war that's happening in the country just south of us, resulting in so many deaths and so much terror and fear and suffering. You know, and we're connected to this. We're responsible for this to some degree.
Matthew, thank you very, very much.
Thanks for having me.
Matthew Heineman is the filmmaker behind Cartel Land, which this weekend is up for the Best Documentary Oscar. That's it for this week's show. On the Media is produced by Kimmy Regler, Mira Sharma, Alana Casanova-Burgess, Jesse Brenneman, and Mithali Rao. We had more help from Dasha Lizitsina and David Conrad, and our show was edited by, this week, executive producer Katya Rogers. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineers this week were Casey Means and Casey Holford. Jim Schachter is WNYC's vice president for news. Bassist and composer Ben Allison wrote our theme. On the Media is a production of WNYC Studios. Brooke Gladstone will be back next week. I'm Bob Garfield.
Support for On the Media comes from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the Overbrook Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio.